views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
I've accepted as headcanon for Stranger Things that Eleven is basically just like a feral Jedi. Like, every time I watch an episode, I just think that this is like a galaxy far, far away, but like she has, like a lot of midichlorians, right?
Was she the Padawan that got away when Anakin killed her?
The Padawan that got away, yes.
The Padawan.
Yeah, and she just was raised in the wild with her force powers, and she's technically a Jedi.
She got taken to the late 70s planet.
Whatever that woman that everybody thinks Obi-Wan fucked in the prequels.
Duchess Satine.
Satine, yeah. That she ended up like getting on a ship and just finding a new planet and ended up being 1970s Earth.
Nice.
And then gave birth to Eleven. That's headcanon. So anybody listening can take that for their own personal headcanon. I'm perfectly okay with that.
But. Big hair and big sideburns. All you need.
That's all you need. I mean, mm-hmm. It fits, kind of, you know. Satine would land and be like, yeah, this looks like the Star Wars I know. Like, everybody's got sideburns. It's fine. But I was interested that this season, half of it, Eleven didn't have powers.
No, yeah. It was amazing.
I've seen the nerfing powers thing used in so many different situations in movies and TV shows where
There's
somebody so powerful you either don't have them around or something, I don't have my powers. And it's a trope that's been used time and time again. But I feel like this was earned a little bit more than a lot of the other ones did.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, if Smash was here, he'd be talking about how, like, Superman lost his powers for a while.
Yeah, remember when Superman got drunk at a fucking diner and got his ass kicked after he lost his powers? You remember
that? Man.
That was a cool thing that happened.
Shit's hard.
Okay, Superman versus Eleven. Because, like, Superman is tough and shit, but, like, Eleven has psychic powers. Like, she can make your
brain
hemorrhage.
She doesn't have the endurance. I mean, yeah, no, Superman would win in that fight. Now, Eleven versus, like, Akira? Like, that's a good battle. Because that's basically what her character is.
That's season five. Yeah.
That's what her character is. Yeah. They got the fucking numbers tattooed on their arms, man. It's fucking Akira.
I love the Duffer Brothers are around our age, and they grew up watching the same shit we watched and have the same references that we love, and they keep incorporating this into all the different episodes of the show to a point where some are very subtle, some are... I mean, beating you over the head with the references. I am here for all of it. I love it so fucking much because there's so many movies out there that are nods to the greats, the Carpenters and the James Cameron's movies and shit, that they're almost imitating. But this is clear homage while still having a lot of originality as well. And that's what I think separates this series.
I agree. This is a pastiche.
A pastiche, yes.
Is the best way to say it. And also, it is also not for our old asses. It is, but it isn't. We all love it, but we're like the old people that love it. Because it's really made for the next generation that hopefully will start going back and watching shit like The Goonies. And
you know, as I get older, I am excited about the nerddom of, like, kids discovering D&D.
They will continue, but, you know, they've also fallen, like, the... Dice on a table situation has fallen victim to the massive multiplayer game and different things that are more modern, but...
I think there's always going to be a craving for, like, personal experience with other people. Like, board games, tabletop games, there's always going to be a time where people want to get together, drink really, really sugary sodas until, like, 5 o'clock in the morning and talk about how they saw a boob on the bus. And
boobies. Everybody loves boobies.
Absolutely. Oh my god, I love that so much.
Bus boobs were rare, but they're pretty fucking valuable.
A rare bus boob sighting, yes. But
yeah.
Those times are really important, at least for me and when I was a kid, to have those times of not just bus boobs, but to have those times with my friends staying up until, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning playing Mortal Kombat or tabletop games or. You know, just having those bonding moments with your friends. But let's get into the episode. We are talking about season 4 Stranger Things. So this will be very spoiler heavy. So please, final warning, episode 252 of Geeks Under the Influence. All Things Stranger Things Season 4. Welcome!
Woo!
Yes! Over the fucking moon to talk about this. I don't want to waste a lot of time on introductions because we have so fucking much to talk about. Let's knock them down real quick. From letstalkpop.net, stand-up comic, pop culture diva extraordinaire, and regular on GUI, we've got Tori Sipe here.
Hello.
Hello. This is definitely your fucking wheelhouse of likes here.
Yeah, very much. And whatever you guys were talking about in the intro, I didn't get any of that because if it was Star Wars, that's just over my head.
Not quite your bag.
Know nothing about it. But
okay. Well, it's a good thing you're on the Stranger Things episode, yeah. Not the Star Wars
sure.
episode.
Yes.
Kenobi released recently, so.
Ewan McGregor, yeah.
Yep.
Trainspotting.
Yep. Trainspotting in space, I think is.
That's right.
How that.
That's
how that
all went. I need to know.
Yeah. Another regular. Audrey, what was the last episode you were on? It wasn't that long ago.
Boba Fett.
It was Boba Fett. So yeah you have been on like not too long ago, which is great. Yeah. Usually it's like once a year or two pop in like, hey.
But no, this one, I was like the kids in the, Hawkins lab. I was like, me.
I've spoken with Audrey before about Stranger Things and like we're all fucking nerds for this shit. So. And everybody is like, protect Dustin at all costs. If Dustin goes, then we riot.
My God. He is like, okay, Mike is the heart of the party. No, Dustin.
Dustin.
No, Will thinks Mike is because he wants to fuck. Like, that's... you're the heart of my dick, is what it's more
he's
like.
He's in love with him, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely... And that's fine. That's great. But, like, Dustin's clearly the heart of this shit.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. This season... Oh, my God. That last... When he was talking to Eddie's uncle, just tears. Just... Shh. Oh, my God.
The heart of GUI's cinephile... like experience the man with an impossible collection of film and film references in his repertoire, the co-host of Beautiful Disasters podcast, available at GUIPodcast.com. We've got co-hosting with me this evening, Herr Grootz.
Yes, indeed.
Scheduling has been very difficult, especially with us doing every week releases. It's that time of year where there's so many releases coming out that we're not doing a lot of GUI Nights episodes. Just stacked and stacked and stacked.
That's
so
right.
So low-down schedule has not allowed for him to be on as many as he would like to be.
That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's
but,
okay.
But I will fill his gigantic shoes.
With socks and sandals, probably.
Yeah, probably. And let's introduce the Dustin of this panel, who is a little strange in his own way.
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah.
A little silly. A little funny looking, maybe. But definitely... has a big old heart.
Aww.
Mr. Mike, the Hobbit.
Yay. What's up? Okay. Hey, what's going on? Thank you for joining us on this trek through the Upside Down. I'm Mike the Hobbit. Check out all our stuff at GYPodcast.com for links to all the other shows, social media stuff, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff you do for shows. And let's get fucking into it. Season 4 got split into two very weird segments where you've got hour to hour and a half episodes. Of it was what, like six episodes, I think, to start?
Seven
episodes, seven. And then two episodes. And part of it was they just weren't done with the last two, and they're like, we got to get out the ones that we have available.
Yeah.
And I get it. I get why they split stuff up. I get why these episodes were so long, the last ones, because there wasn't like a natural stopping point with these stories. But that was definitely weird.
Because I was just like, because you wanted to... where they ended it was just like, oh, fuck. Oh, my God. It's like, what do they call it? When you're about to come and then just...
You just pre-come.
Yeah.
Edging?
Yeah. Edging. Yes. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, it's edging.
Wow. You went there. That's awesome.
I love a story about teens, and you're like, edging. You're like, okay.
It was geek edging.
Geek edging, for sure.
Geek edging. Yeah.
So I think this is probably, looking forward, this might be Netflix experimenting with releasing on a longer schedule. Of course, they have always released everything at once, and Amazon did that for a long time, too. And then suddenly Amazon was doing three episodes, and then you got to wait a week for each. So this might be outside of just them, you know, not having this epic fucking season completely finished and they wanted to release some of it and have 3 more weeks to work. I don't know.
I think everything got fucked up with the pandemic and like this season got pushed back like 2 years from when they were planning on releasing it. So I think the release schedule is definitely affected by like when they had time to record like the stuff, film the stuff. These kids aged like 3 years in the time between season 3 and season 4. So you can tell
Will, especially
Will is.
Oh my gosh.
Will has like 5 o'clock shadow. Like he's got a bad back now from working in the mines. Like he has gotten up there in age. He has grown like 1.5 feet from the last time that we saw him.
They just need to like film season 5, like immediately then. Because it's going to pick up exactly where the end, like, leaves off. So it's just like, what, they're going to be, like, even older? Right. It's going to be, like, ridiculous.
Well, that's why they're talking about, I think, a time jump. So, which is weird because that's just, like, what have they been doing for, like, you know, a couple of years? Just, oh, well, you know, here's this whole gate open. We'll just let it sit for a couple of years.
It's fine.
To jump to the end of it, you've got where they're looking at this town that has this like Hell's Gate kind of thing happening, and all the plants are dying up to a point. And if they do a time jump, I would fucking love it that they showed up that like the Upside Down has fully taken over the world.
Yeah, see, I would...
Would be very cool.
Where I would be okay with that.
People are living in fucking hovels, hiding from demon bats and shit, and it's just, like, been the norm...
Bats from hell!
For, like, 2 years. For 2 years, everybody's just been like, yeah, there's demon bats now, it's a thing.
So Sauron won, and it's all shit.
Yeah, right?
Well, I would have to go back and watch it again, because, you know, I need a couple days to emotionally process everything.
Right.
Like, God. But it kind of looked like the library had vines starting to grow on it. So, again, that might be... I would have to watch it again to see if I missed that detail or not. But it might kind of start, like, creeping up on Hawkins. Yeah.
I just don't want it to, like, become, like, the new Jurassic World movie. We're just like, oh, we're living with dinosaurs. Oh, no, a pterodactyl grabbed our doves at our wedding. Like,
oh, Steve Harrington holds his hand out to stop a fucking demigorgon from...
Yeah, the demobats are just like, oh, shoot, our wedding's ruined. Like,
he's, like, training demigorgons, and he's, like, riding a motorcycle with his pet demigorgons next to him and shit. It would be fucking brilliant.
That'd be great.
One thing that Stranger Things has done before, but they've done it in way harder this season, was separating this ensemble into different groups and having those stories overlap over top of them. So we had the California crew, we had the Hawkins crew, and we had the Russia crew were the three main ones that we looked at this season. And I think they did a really deft job of giving equal time for all the development and all of the arching stories hitting the mark at the end.
And even halfway through this season, they had a 0.5 crew because, of course, Elle splits off and has the whole Nina experience, and that's happening. But what you were talking about, I have to give 100% credit to the creators, the showrunners, the Duffer Brothers, for being some of the best guys doing any kind of television right now.
Absolutely.
How hard is it to do a good show? It's hard. How hard is it to start strong? Yeah, that's really hard. How hard is it to continue that and make it better season after season? This is the 4th season, and each time they make it better without cheapening anything.
Nope.
They're like increasing plot lines, and there are even Easter eggs that I think this is planned. Like, they have put them in back in the day when they were like, well, if this goes 1 season, we'll see what happens, you know? And if it goes 2, like, we can pick it up. And if it doesn't happen, it's just a cool thing.
Yeah.
I think they literally did that throughout the entire time they've been
making definitely.
This.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was just so enthralling, and I was just, like, so happy. All these, like, different storylines, and I cared about every single person's storyline. And that is so difficult to make that happen, where it's just, like, all these different things. I will say the, like, Will, Mike, Jonathan storyline, if it wasn't for Argyle, I don't know if I would have cared as much, because that guy was hilarious.
Argyle was rad as shit. He was great addition.
So good.
I loved him so much. And it's just, you didn't, like, I loved that it eventually paid off because of, you know, when he, you know, they made the makeshift Nina.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, okay, well, what's Argyle doing besides just being there? Because even though I loved him, I was like, okay, what's his role? And then
is he the droid C-3PO or something, like comedic relief, the Jar Jar Binks of Stranger Things?
And then
things,
it just, all of a sudden, it paid off. And you're like, oh my God, yeah, finally, the Surfer Boy. And they made the makeshift, you know, Nina and the pizza dough.
He wasn't just the guy with the Volkswagen Vanagon.
Yeah. And he made them pizza.
It paid off.
I love that little addition, that in addition to being like, oh yeah, here's a freezer and salt, like, here you go. And I just give this dude a joint. He's like, yeah, have the keys to the store. Great. Perfect. And it made sense. You were in on it. It's fine. But then in the meantime, he's like, I'll make a tasty pie for all my buds in the meantime.
Whoever was opening the next day, though, was like super pissed, right? They were like, who closed last night?
There's just like room temperature dough just expanding all over the restaurant and shit. Because, you know, they didn't just like take 3 hours to
just
like
a salt water bath,
clean it up and dump the water and everything back. I would love that Duffer Brother cut of the final episode where it's just them, a montage of them to like, I don't know, that you're the best around or something, of them just like wiping all the water away on the floor.
That's why it took two days for them to get there.
Exactly.
Man.
To clean up.
Half a day of just cleaning.
Why is this freezer full of water in the middle of the floor?
Who left the oven on?
Right. Now I remembered. It's funny how people like Argyle and Eddie, you know, they're two characters who haven't been around. They don't know anything about the Upside Down. They have, but they kind of are just like, sounds legit. they're like, okay, there's the Upside Down. There's this girl with the powers. Well, I mean, I guess he did see like crash a whole fucking helicopter.
Yeah.
So I guess he saw that part, but
he also does a lot of drugs.
Yeah. He's like, legit, bro.
He's open to experiences. And then the other dude is a very imaginative, like, D&D fucking, you know, dungeon master.
But also, he's looking at, he's got, like, his bros that he plays D&D with that he trusts, right? But he's also got, like, the former, like, cool guy there, Steve Harrington. All these different groups of people coming together being like, oh no, like demons are real. There's like a hell gate under the water.
Eddie didn't need any of that shit.
And he's like, okay, I guess this
he had
has got to be
true. Girl turn into a pretzel and her eyes get sucked right? in on his trailer ceiling. He saw that shit.
I think Eddie was more surprised that Steve Harrington was cool.
Like, he was
like, true. Well, Steve. Like,
that was kind of a nice moment where they got a chance to really talk to each other and they were like, okay, yeah, cool, all right.
Oh my God, when he was like, Dustin Henderson worships you, man. I was like, oh, God.
He was jealous.
He was so jealous. He was so jealous.
But then, oh, my God, the bonding scene with a battle.
Battle.
And apparently some of that was improvised. I think, yeah, God. I'm going to, like, tears are going to start forming if I talk about that. But Eddie's, like, final scene when he was like, I love you, man. That was not scripted. That was that was not scripted at
they
all.
They went with it. Nice.
Joseph Quinn.
That's the actor. I got to give a lot of credit to that actor because there were moments, especially the introduction of the character, where they're sitting at the lunch table and they're all talking and he's going on this diatribe about, like, no, normal is the weirdos, man. We're not weird. They're weird kind of shit. And he's getting up on the table and screaming at the jocks and stuff. It was cheesy, but he pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many ways that could have completely put the brakes on my appreciation of that episode if it was just... And a new character? That was so fucking risky. But
yes.
He did it. He fucking... He carried that scene.
Oh, my God. Just... Oh, the best.
His character... won me over within the first episode because, you know, he's like the salty, like, freak of the school who's been there a couple extra years. You know, he hasn't quite graduated yet. But what really sold me is, like, when he had the actual D&D game sequence and they brought the sister in place and he bonds, like, she's a little mouth on her too. And they bond, and he is that guy who just has it down. Like, he's got his crew.
Well, he knows who he is.
He's got his game.
Yeah.
But he's having a good time, and acceptance is what it's all about. And you knew he was a good dude from there on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And I think part of, for me at least, I think the character of Eddie resonates with so many of us, like, nerds and stuff, because I think it's safe to say, like, in this room, we all were an Eddie or knew someone like Eddie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's, for sure. Yeah. And it's just because that character, you know, just really, that resonates with me, because I knew a bunch of people in high school who were just like that. And of course, I went to school in the Satanic Panic Columbine era. So it was easy for people to say, like, these are freaks, without realizing that they are good people. You know, mm-hmm. they just want to mm-hmm. play their games and have fun with their friends, maybe smoke a little joint.
maybe smoke a little weed, you know.
Just a little bit.
You know. Just a little weed.
Just a little weed on the side.
It is weird that to think that my senior year of high school was 99, the year that Columbine happened.
Yeah, so, I was a freshman.
I was a senior when that happened. And I remember I wore a trench coat to school normally throughout the year, because I was like this horror punk kid. I listened to the fucking Misfits and and put eyeliner on and like had a mohawk and...
it was all Marilyn Manson, admit it.
Yeah. Well, no. The school I went to was Marilyn Manson, because I moved from California to Virginia, and they were like, what's punk rock? We like the spooky guy on MTV, and that was about the extent of it. But
yeah.
But that being said, is that I at that point, people realized that I was a giant fucking dork, and so they weren't worried about me shooting up the place. But I remember getting in an argument with my mom the day of Columbine that I wanted to wear my trench coat. Is kind of like, hey, freaks aren't the problem. It's something else. And she begged me, and I finally, like, relented and didn't wear my trench coat to school. But I wanted to, like, even in the moment, be like, freaks aren't the problem. They are. No. That's not, that's satanic true. Panic shit.
Mm-hmm. Which brings up an interesting point, is that the character of Eddie was actually based kind of on Damien Eccles.
Yep.
And of course, famous case where Satanic Panic and these kids got accused.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
What's the series of
Paradise Lost?
Paradise Lost. There's Paradise what three Lost. Three documentaries, I think, total.
Yeah.
The West Memphis Three. There was a bunch of support thrown behind in the punk and rock and roll scenes. Mm-hmm. Benefit CDs that mm-hmm. came out. Benefits done for them and stuff. But yeah, and they took advantage of a kid with developmental needs and got him to confess to something that he didn't do and blamed it all on Satan, and they got fucking put in prison for something that...
On death row for Damien.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say, like, as these seasons have been ramping up and they've been kind of following the trajectory of, like, Harry Potter, where it started off, like, easier in the first season, and it's getting a little bit more mature. And it's getting rated R now. I mean, for the most part.
It's getting pretty dark.
It's very close. And my, you know, sort of cynical side started to, like, you know, the side that has been punished by, like, Kurt Sutter and showrunners like that, where I was like, oh, bad stuff's going to happen. And, like, so many people are going to die.
I was wondering if one of the cores were going to die this season.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to happen in season 5. We're going to get some actual, like,
I think
from
so
the beginning, people, they're going to go. I think Will's brother.
Jonathan.
I think he's going.
I thought he was going to go this season for sure.
I thought
he and Nancy mm-hmm. were going to go.
Yeah, I thought Steve for sure, because, of course, when he was talking about his 6 nuggets, I was like, oh, no. When they're talking about their dreams and hopes for the future,
that's always in a horror? In horror? Mm-hmm. Like, you're basically being like, so I'm dead next, right? Yeah. Are we good with that?
I also thought Steve, and it was just because there was just way too much buildup. He kept having these speeches. He kept having these things, these, like, side notes, these things. And it was just like, you know, like, Robin was saying, like, I don't think we're going to make it out of this. And, like, all this stuff. I was like, there's too much buildup. But I'm like, I don't know. I think they're tricking us. I don't know. And then they did.
And this is why these guys are great showrunners. But I legitimately was about to have an Opie moment, you know, for anybody who saw Sons of Anarchy. I was ready to, like, flip a table if either Hopper or Joyce perished before they got to go to Enzo's or hooked up.
Oh, yeah.
I would have fucking lost my goddamn mind.
I think they're safe now. I really do think that they're safe.
For now.
Like, Hopper had his redemption arc. He went through a fucking Russian prison sewer. Twice. He was tortured. He fought a Demogorgon with a fucking, with the Conan sword.
Yo! With the fucking Conan sword. Oh, he never long bottomed that shit.
Yeah. I feel like he earned his place of like, you don't get to fuck with him anymore. He did his thing. He's going to be a support character for the final season. He's going to do some cool shit. He's not going to be the one that saves the day, but he's also going to make it. And Nancy, don't you fucking dare touch his love. Don't you fucking do it. Like, he gets to have this.
You mean Joyce.
Or Joyce. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Please don't have him hook up with Nancy.
No.
That,
no, Joyce.
Then the series would take a weird turn. A very weird turn.
Which was so satisfying to see them finally, yes, make out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that scene, and it didn't click until later for me, the scene when she comes through with a electric prod to get the Demodog off him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, because she saw Bob die in front of her in season mm-hmm. two. So she was like, not again.
Poor Bob.
Yep.
Yeah.
And imagine like being on Tinder and then like going on a date to hook up and like, so your last ex, like, oh, Demi-Dog. oh, what about the one before that?
Dogs.
Demi-Dog.
Demi-Dogs.
I gotta go. You know there's like giant fissures running through the town from hell, right? Like, this is not the time to date the girl that all the Demi-Dogs kill their boyfriend. Like,
whose son maybe caused it?
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not the time.
Ooh.
Oh my God. And I am so excited for all the news I've seen that Will is going to be like even bigger, like have a bigger role next season.
He's new.
Because that was so interesting when they said like the Upside Down is stuck the day he went missing. And I'm like, that can't just be a throwaway line. Like, there's got to be something more to it. And I'm excited for Will to do more because I fucking love his character, and it was a bummer that he gets sidelined for the last two seasons because his performance in season two gave me chills.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I was scared of him.
What do we think about, because a lot of people were mad that he didn't actually say the words like, I'm gay, but I'm like, because it's like very obvious it's, where they're going, and they think they said
season five it's gonna happen.
And the thing is like, it's the 80s, it's Indiana. I don't know if he will.
No, he wouldn't. Like, that's the thing. It totally makes sense. Like, he's trying to figure it out. He didn't grow up in a town where, like, he has any exposure to that. He's feeling away.
I think you're going to see him and Maya Hawke.
Robin.
Get a little more familiar with each other where he has, even though she's, like, a lesbian, it's going to be a little bit more normalized for him, the idea of, like, same-sex couples with, like, her ginger love that she's connecting with.
Yeah, and that's why his scene when he was talking to Mike in the van was so riveting. Ugh, because he was talking about, like, he was talking about Elle, but kind of talking about himself when he was saying, like, somebody who shouldn't exist, or, you know, who's a, I don't know the exact word he said, but basically saying something like, shouldn't exist.
Fucking heartbreaking.
And it was heart-wrenching because he feels that way about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so, like, oh my God, when he was, like, silently crying, I was just like, ugh. I just,
oh, tears. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's one of the top five scenes of the whole show, the, you know, of the entire season. And, like, again, it's just a testament to their storytelling and writing ability to be able to construct that and bring it together, because I was expecting the painting to come out at some crucial moment where it was going to be a bunch of, like, somebody dying. Like, I thought it was going to be, like, more dramatic, and it was so nuanced and perfect that it came out right then and there.
And it was
the
just
way
sweet.
that was delivered had more, like, impact than a giant soundtrack epic like special effects sequence, which I'm not knocking, those are awesome too, but that was an amazing scene.
I do want to, as talking about, like, the emotional heft that these child actors are delivering.
Yes, what I
that,
was just
holy
about to
shit,
say
that oh like God. these are kids that they were like 10, 12 years old when they started this journey on this series, and you've got these kids delivering incredibly dense and nuanced performances of like dramatic and intense moments. And the one specifically that I was not only way overdue for a more leading story arc within the series, but also just absolutely fucking destroyed was Lucas. With Max. His tone in his voice when he's asking, like, we got to get her to a doctor. We need a paramedic, like, to his
when
sister.
When he said, get help. Also, I was not scripted.
Done for. I was fucking done for. You heard the immediacy in his voice, the genuine fear in his voice. It was wavering, but not too much, where it was like almost cartoonish. It was real. It was intense. It was honest. It was fucking fantastic. Oh, he knocked it fuck out of the park.
Phenomenal.
I mean, at this point, I'm just watching through like fucking tears at that point in this series. Everything. She's like, I can't see. You're like, oh, fuck. You're seeing her limbs fucking curl
Peter
up.
Peter Parker.
My God. And also, Max did a fantastic job as well as being the hard ass that, like, has that moment of like finding her way back to Lucas. Oh, God. Ah, so good. So fucking good.
Also, like, going back to, like, Will for a second, like, the scene where he talks to Jonathan, like, when they're just, like, making the, like, salt bath, like, that is just such a powerful scene. And at first, I was just like, oh, he's gonna, like, but then it didn't need to be.
Nope, it didn't need to be. Yeah.
And I'm so glad that they did.
I was waiting for it, and I was like, no, this scene just played out perfectly.
It is what it is, and this is a beautiful moment between two brothers, and it just, like, it's great.
Yep.
And like, it was perfect.
So smart.
I have to go back to the very first season in the sense that these guys are getting it right, that they found the right kids that can do the job, but they also are writing and directing for these kids that are so, like, it works so well. This is why Spielberg movies works. Mm-hmm. This is why if they didn't get that element right, if they hired a bunch of, you know, like, you know, and got George Lucas to direct the goddamn kids some bullshit, like, this would have never taken off.
No.
And the fact that they are, you know, 5 years in, 6 years now, almost, you know, in to this saga, and they are getting better and better and better, and they're pulling out adult performances now that are blowing us away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like, these kids are just so phenomenal, and like, everybody, the whole cast just brings it so much. Like, they really pull you in. Like, I mean, just, you feel so much for these characters. You feel like they're people, like, that, you know, and it's just like, oh my God, they're just so great at what they do. Like, everybody is so charming, so captivating, and even the adult cast, like Winona Ryder and David Hopper, like, oh, David Harbour. But yeah,
he should just change it.
Yeah, he should just change it.
David Hopper, he's just a Hopper forever. But yeah, just, and their performances, like, I've always loved Winona Ryder, but she just brings everything to that role.
You're reminded why you had such a crush on her back in the, like, 80s and 90s.
This isn't the point I was going to say, but, like, wasn't Winona Ryder, like, the bring to the show originally? Like, wasn't that the name where people were like, oh, because, like, no one knew who the kids were. And then,
you had and Modine, I think, as well.
She was
Matthew Modine a little bit, but I mean, like, you know, people were just like, oh wow, because, you know, she was so big, and then all the stuff, and, you know, she
was the biggest star. Winona Ryder Renaissance.
Yeah,
it was almost like her comeback.
Now,
the Ryder-sance.
Am impressed that they've gone four seasons, and have kept her. They have not sexualized her yet.
No.
Yep.
I respect that so hard, because I know how hot Winona Ryder is.
Everyone knows how hot Winona Ryder is.
Don't we all? Except for herself, like, but yeah.
But in this show, she is always dressed down. She's in baggy clothes. She all that. When they get their date at Enzo's, she's going to look so good. And I'm going to fucking lose my mind.
I saw, like, an interview, and it was, like, her and David Harbour, and then they were talking, and she was just saying, like, how in the 80s, she's like, oh, yeah, casting agent said I wasn't, like, pretty, and I wasn't good looking, and then, like, you see David Harbour just give her, like, this side eye, like,
I've seen that interview.
What? Because it was, like, his first, like, crush in the 80s, and she's just like, yeah, I wasn't pretty. He's like, okay.
Okay.
Oh, I definitely beat off to Beetlejuice.
Speaking of edgy.
That's why it was called Beetlejuice.
Oh my God. Lydia.
Wasn't there a porn about that?
Did it for me.
Oh, probably.
Beetlejism. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
It's out there.
Wait, for real? That's what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Beetlejism.
I feel like it could be more creative.
There's also Edward Penis Hands.
They went with Beetlejism instead of Beetlejizz. Like, Beetlejizz sounds way better than Beetlejism.
Sure.
Beetlejizz?
I've got VHS rips somewhere on my day. I mean, how do you not be a Tim Burton fan?
Yeah, do that in an Edward Penishands double feature at some point.
There you go.
I think if we want to talk about like how great like the kids are, like their acting, we have to talk about like Dear Billy. Max in that is the, I mean, you know, Kate Bush, hey, like it, like what a smart, it just, it's so perfect. Look, it's such a perfect scene.
Perfect example,
it just,
all those classic 70s songs from the Guardians of the Galaxy 1 soundtrack that blew up after what, like 40, 50 years of being around. And it was because of, now there's new context to put those songs into.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Kate Bush running up that hill. That's a fucking banger song in the first place. But you put such an emotional moment connected to that where she's literally going to die. And talk about like, fuck you, Duffer Brothers. Talk about knowing how to like create a cultural moment.
I know.
I've everybody been like, what's your song? What's the song that would save you from Vecna? Yeah. What's that song?
What's your Vecna you? Song? What's
and then she's like, running up that hill. And her eyes turn fucking white and she's floating and the crescendo. Fuck you, Duffer Brothers. You have me in your fucking palm.
God, I just, oh my God. Yeah. That whole sequence just amazing. Like one of the most standout like things of the whole season. Like just that episode was insane.
Incredible.
Like,
it's one of the best moments of television.
Yeah.
It really is.
Oh my God.
I will say that is probably one of the most favorite moments in the whole series ever.
Yep,
now
absolutely.
My absolute favorite was the should I stay the clash interrogation.
Nice.
Oh right. Yeah.
I'm like run my words together now.
That's
we're so excited.
It's not geeks under the influence of that, a little bit of slurring here and there.
No, I mean, yeah. Max, how did they, first of all, they got a great young actor cast. How did they get more than half of that young actor cast to be able to bring adult resonance performance? Max's, what you just talked about with Lucas, Will for most of the entire, like series, honestly, like from the very get, season one.
Oh yeah.
Will Byers. Holy shit. And I mean, to have that many super talented and get those performances, like again, it just is fucking astonishing.
Yeah. And like, God, I'm going to cry thinking about it, but just Eddie's final scene and between him and Dustin. And even before that, when they were, you know, getting the Never Change Henderson before they went into battle. But God, just, yeah. And Dustin's, you know, when he was talking to Eddie's uncle, just the lip quiver that he did.
Oh.
Just, oh, that sent me over the edge. I just, that broke me.
I do love the sentiment of Eddie is definitely one being like, is this the most metal moment that could ever exist? Then that's worth dying for. And Dustin being like, yeah. Like it's metal enough that like, I mean, if we're going to go out, that's a pretty good way to go out when they're talking about doing it. And when he gets off the roof and they get away momentarily from the demon bats, and they're like, metal! There's so many! They're like screaming.
Oh,
there's demon bats trying to get in. Like, you're in the upside down in like a hellscape, and you're just like, that was so fucking metal! Just screaming at each other. So fucking great.
I was about to cry.
I was so glad to see those performances from Dustin at the end, because I've been like waiting for something like that. Because it's like, yeah, he's had like serious moments, but this was like such a like tour de force performance from him.
Absolutely.
And, you know, because he's been kind of the comic relief.
Oh.
Like, the whole time, and it was just
for him to have that moment.
I was so happy he got that moment, and it was just so heartbreaking
and
sad.
I was with him, and
I'm seriously about to start crying.
Well, that's actually a good. Well, we're at the time as well. Take a break, collect ourselves, and get into the second half here in just a moment. Take a listen to some of the other shows available on the network. When we come back, we're going to hit our sponsors, do a drunken thing or two, maybe some what we're drinking here and there. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
In a world of blockbuster movies, there's another dimension.
The dimension of schlock cinema. Join us at Beautiful Disasters on a journey into the fringe territory of B-movie abandon.
We review the flicks that are forgotten or underappreciated to give them a proper place in the annals of celluloid history.
I'm the Groots.
F you, Hunter.
Your guides at Beautiful Disasters. Come along with us for a fun ride.
May the schlock be with you.
In a world with too many reboots and remakes,
two men will stop at nothing to make it even worse.
Join Mike the Hobbit and Tondi as they play by their own rules while pitching new takes on some of your favorite and least favorite films and TV shows. What podcast would dare to bring this upon the world?
This is Smack My Pitch Up.
Hey guys, Scotty P here with Smash.
On your left.
And we are
the Geek Fathers.
That's right, bringing all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent.
So welcome to our world.
And as always, join us
or cry.
Welcome back to Geeks Under the Influence, all things Stranger Things Season 4. But before we continue with our cavalcade of scream crying, I think, about the certain aspects of the show, we're going to talk about our sponsors a little bit. First off is Amazon.com. Definitely part of the problem, ruining our society and the world. But if you're still using Amazon.com, make sure to take a little bit of money away from them and give it to us instead by shopping through the link at GUIpodcast.com. That way you're getting the same products that you begrudgingly are purchasing on Amazon, but you're giving at least a few percentage points of that money to us instead of them. So if you have to use the service at this point, you might as well at least make sure that they're getting at least a little bit less and you're giving it to struggling podcasts, independent podcasts like us instead. So all the Stranger Things memorabilia and stuff, I've got plenty of Stranger Things toys on the shelf in here. To choose from that you could probably find on Amazon. If you want to, there's even seasons. That was, I think, the first time that Netflix made seasons available on DVD and Blu-ray. And Tori was nice enough to bring us the Stranger Things Sour Patch Kids that are available through, you got them through Amazon, right?
I sure did. Yeah. A whole box. So, $14.49.
If you want your Stranger Things branded stuff and you cannot find it in local stores and have to go begrudgingly to Amazon, just make sure you go to GUIpodcast.com, click on the Amazon link, and give us a little bit of credit for it. Now, the way we really want you to support GUI for the most part is through TeePublic. TeePublic. We've got over 40 designs available for T-shirts, for button stickers, baby onesies, laptop bags, couch pillows, all sorts of stuff. We just released a design Jurassic World Dominion one where it's a dinosaur trainer shirt where it's got like the T-Rex skeleton, but there's a hand up like stopping it in its tracks as apparently that. That's all you have to do is just hold up your hand and dinosaurs stop.
Yeah.
That's what I learned from those movies. I'm definitely going to work on a Stranger Things design. We're long overdue.
Yeah.
We have to do a GUI Stranger Things design.
True.
I'm going to work on that, see what we can do. All those designs are available, GUIpodcast.com/store. Click on the link. It'll send you to our TeePublic store where there's over 40 designs. There's all the different shows on the network, including Groots. You've got the couple different disastrous designs
on
there.
Yeah, we have a few. They're lovely.
You've got the newest one is the Buckaroo Banzai inspired designs that are on there.
Yes, by Lorna Bond, Lorna Digital.
Yeah.
Did a great job.
Great, great designs. And the Battle Royale inspired design for the Schlock Abuse program.
Yes, you did that.
I did that.
I know.
I did do that, yeah.
Super awesome.
So check that out, GUIpodcast.com/store for all the links to our designs. Tell your friends, buy really inappropriate baby onesies for your kids or your friends' kids. There's a Live, Laugh, Love human centipede design that's perfect for a baby onesie. Wow. So check that out. And if it's not on sale, it will be in the next week or two, probably. So just keep checking back.
Fuck you.
And that's our sponsors. On to the stuff that really motivates this podcast. Really, the thing that started this all was just friends sitting around drinking and talking about nerdy shit. We're talking about what we're drinking.
Hey, we're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey.
We're drinking. We're getting drunk.
Yay.
Oh, boy.
We've got definitely a mix of choices here for this. So for I think Audrey and I both had the right idea of doing White Claw. It's hot out. It's it's hot. It's an easy drinking White Claw, but I got the Surf in honor of the California kids from Stranger Things season 4. There's Surfer Pizza.
Surfer Boy Pizza.
Surfer Boy Pizza. So a nice, refreshing, crisp
Try
beverage.
Try before you deny, Brochacho.
What's funny about that company is that they employ Volkswagen Vanagons for their delivery vehicles, which is why you don't see them anymore. Because there was a joke about them coming for Domino's in the season. Like, we're coming for Domino's. No, if that's what they're spending their money on as a corporation, that vehicle.
Are Vanagons? Yeah.
Vanagons? No, they lose. They lose all their money.
It was a very fun little addition of this, like, stoner pizza, California pizza boy as, like, the new addition to the crew. Loved it to death. White Claw Surf. I will say there's a really fun mix of flavors that I definitely prefer to regular White Claw. So if you have a chance to try it out, it's definitely worth it. We got it on GoPuff, so it's available out there. But Groots, you brought something a little bit more adult and reasonable.
I did.
To drink as a human.
We should. All right. We'll just do it now. It's fine.
Okay.
So I brought a single malt whiskey, a good one. It's one of my favorite whiskeys, actually. This is the Glenlivet 12-Year Illicit Still, a limited release. Our friend Crump turned me on to it. I hope it comes back. It's outstanding. I wanted to bring a good whiskey in memory of Eddie.
Of Eddie?
Oh, pour one out.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Let's do a little toast to Eddie here.
Toast to Eddie.
Because, goddamn, if there hasn't been a more epic Woo. And better, you know, fucking death on screen.
Oh my God.
Years.
Gosh.
That shit was awesome.
The when he's like, I didn't run.
Oh don't God. Start.
I think it's my year, Henderson.
No.
Oh God.
Every line.
Fucking A. That shit was amazing.
Fucking ruin my life, why don't you?
Oh
Jesus.
My God.
God damn it.
I think everybody of a certain age had a friend or has a friend similar to Eddie.
I wish there was an Eddie because I would have just had so much sex with him in high school. Oh. Like, I've seen the actor yeah. and then... I've seen the actor and I've told like my husband this. I tell people this all the time. I don't like guys with long hair. I can't stand it. I've never liked it. That freaking mullet man just like gets me. He looks so much better with that than like... his normal like short like
yeah
I don't know it's I don't know man
that actor did an absolutely fantastic job. I really am looking forward to seeing where his career trajectory takes him
wait.
From here
sure yeah
that's a very nuanced character have somebody that's so guarded and so reactive and loud and brash but like smart and caring and kind, like there's so many different elements to that character that he absolutely killed. He yeah. was so good at it.
And his scene with Chrissy, yeah, that scene with Chrissy, because then you see, oh, you're not like I thought you were.
And having that moment of just being humans together. Yeah.
That was one of my favorite scenes. Yes, like, I love it. It's just like the head cheerleader and like the guy who's been held back for like 2 years, like plays D&D and stuff. Yeah. And they just like have this moment together. I love it.
I think we just could go on about.
Yeah,
Eddie
we could keep going on. Yeah.
But I will say, Oh man, I lost my train of thought because I love them so.
There's more shares.
Let's finish the shares.
Yeah,
There's the Glenlivet 12, which is clearly the best choice out of our shares. There's one that's definitely not equal to, called Neon Burst Hard Drinks Punch Blast,
which would be the drink of choice of the teen villains.
Yeah, the frat bros that are partying in the abandoned building. This is definitely
Benny's. Now what they did to Benny's my God. Memory.
Benny was like, I immediately attached myself to Benny, being like, I hope that this is like a main character because I love him so much. He's so great.
He was the first tragic character.
And he died like immediately. Made me so sad.
I just realized what Benny's was. I didn't think about that. Because that was also Toby on This Is Us, which also just ended and was one of my favorite shows. And then I was just like, that was that? Fuck those kids, man.
Yeah, fuck those kids.
Which, speaking of Benny and people who died, like who were there for one season, and I think that like how Eddie became such the favorite is because like, yeah, you know, they introduced like Bob in season 2 and everybody loved him, and I loved Alexi in season 3, so they bring these characters in that you love and then immediately kill them off. I think because Eddie was so, you saw more of his character development in just one season, whereas like Bob was like, yeah, that was absolutely heartbreaking. But he didn't have as much screen time.
Well, you were never rooting for him and them to be together. You were.
No.
I just wanted Joyce to be happy.
Yeah.
You make a really good point. Actually, I think Eddie might be one of the all-time best plot device characters ever.
Yeah.
Because he was there to be the guy that was going to be the opposite of the satanic panic, like, you know, freak out with the town and all the asshole jocks. And he was good, and he was everything opposite from what that rhetoric in the 80s was saying. These are all devil worshippers.
Everybody told him who he was, that he was this degenerate, this piece of shit, that he wasn't worth anything. And unfortunately, at that time, that dictated how the world saw him, and it made him not able to reach the potential that he really clearly was able to reach. If he had the opportunity, and it's
and
fucking
he
sad.
He died saving the town that hated him.
Yep, absolutely. speaking of hating, Neon Burst Hard Drinks Punch Blast is very drinkable. Unfortunately,
all right, let's try.
It tastes like fruit punch for the most part.
It does.
It's very sweet and syrupy.
Woo!
Oh, but
that's like Hawaiian punch.
Yeah, it's not. I think this came in a 24-ounce can, 8%. ABV. This would fuck you up. This is also not like the White Claw for skinny bitches. This is this is full of fucking sugar.
How much sugar?
Well, for the per serving, there's 2 servings per container.
I don't think you could put a sour patch.
This 25
in
ounce can.
I'll just make it worse.
I'll put the sour powder in there.
360 calories.
Ooh.
And is 12% of your daily intake of 6 grams of sugar, of added sugars, and 12 grams of carbs.
Ooh.
All right, so
a lot of sodium.
If you want to talk math here, that's 25 ounces. All right, so that's almost a bottle of wine.
Cleanse the palate.
Okay, because a bottle of wine is 750 milliliters, which is, you know, 3/4 of a liter. It's about... That's about a bottle of wine, and it's 8%. That's basically a bottle of wine.
Basically.
It's like someone like just took like 10 pixie sticks and put it in like Kool-Aid and then just was just like throw alcohol in it. And it's just like, thank you for bringing scotch. Cause that is my palate cleanser, because that is just.
Well, just in tribute to the
waffle.
Jocks, like they're going to have something that's just sweet, has no actual like taste or, and it just, it's sweet. It's got a high alcohol percentage. Fuck it. That's good enough.
But yeah, talk about some good villains who were not Vecna, which...
Oh my God. Yeah. The best villains of the 80s were fucking jocks and preps and cheerleaders and football players. Absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah.
You want to have a story where the heroes are fucking D&D players? You better have a good jock character.
Mm-hmm.
A good cheerleader character.
Literally, my brother is a villain from the 80s movies, so it's just like, and I'm not even joking. Like, I could not be...
He's Bill Paxton from Weird Science?
Like,
right?
my brother, it's like my brother just saw like a jock in an 80s movie when he was like seven, and he was just like, that's my personality for the rest of my life.
Oh, no.
And that is still his personality. Oh, and it's like, yeah. Anytime I see like jocks like that and they get their just desserts, it's just so sweet to me.
For 4th of July, we didn't really do much, but we watched a couple movies, including like Good Morning Vietnam. We're like, mm-hmm. Patriotic movie. Good Morning Vietnam. Cool. But also we did Varsity Blues in that same vein. Oh. And man, that movie does hold up. That's a solid movie.
Yeah.
But what's also interesting about that is that like 80s jock mentality, mm-hmm. you're seeing like the kids that grew up with the Midwest rural America parents. So what I'm saying is Varsity Blues is a sequel to Stranger Things.
Shut the fuck up. I'm going to beat your ass.
Oh, no.
That's dumb as hell. Sorry.
Stupid.
I was trying to, I was thinking you were going to end that bit better.
No.
And I was just like, no. No, dude. There's no redeeming that dumbass.
I'm barely flying this plane. Don't expect me to land it.
So we're talking about high school bully villains, which obviously, like, the whole jock crowd was throughout this season was fucking amazing. But let's talk about Eleven's nemesis in the first few episodes, who was just awful, but that's one of the greatest scenes of adolescent revenge, which was shocking. Holy fuck.
Wait, which one? No. The skate to the face?
Skate face!
That. Face. Yes.
At least it wasn't ice skate, man.
Right? No, they're like rubber, right? They're like, yeah, they're hard rubber, but then, you know, they're rubber.
It didn't matter.
By the way, I'm drinking a watermelon gosa from Three Notched.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, cool.
But anyway, yeah. that was... Because I was definitely like the kid that was always bullied. So like I would have loved... And my bully was the superintendent's daughter. And I would have loved to take a roller skate to her face. Like hardcore.
Oh my God. Like I had an Angela like in mm-hmm. middle school. And I'm just like... God, that was so satisfying because it was like, I would have loved to have just, boom.
It's always right middle school.
Middle school's the fucking worst.
Yeah.
Like, it's worse than fucking high school. That's where all the kids are starting to discover their bodies and they're all pieces of shit and smell weird. Like, it's just not great.
And you just get, if you're, yeah, unpopular, you get made fun of for literally everything.
But then, like, Lucas's arc this season, you know, in one of the first episodes, he was just like, oh, you know, I'm on the basketball team because I want to be cool. And this is going to be our in to be the cool guys.
Yeah,
so I like that. We're never going to be cool.
I know.
You are absolutely right that Lucas had one of the best arcs in this entire season. However, I was deathly terrified that he was going to be killed.
Oh, God.
I was so afraid. And in that finale where he's fighting against the dude, I was like, are the Duffer brothers going to go there? Are they going to pull that trigger?
It was
in that
so
moment, I was
close.
So afraid. Like, my terror and about Max dying in this whole situation vanished for a few moments because I was like, oh my God, they might actually kill the black character in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be so hardcore.
Yeah.
Oh, and not even killed by like a evil like hell creature. Killed by
a normal person.
Like just like a fucking
a normal
jock.
Person, and he wouldn't have gotten any type of like
nothing would have happened to him.
Nothing would have happened.
There was
to
something
him,
so both like anticlimactic, but also satisfying that when the fucking Fisher formed and it just dissolved his body in half, and there was just no doubt that dude is definitely fucking dead.
He is dead as shit.
Fucking dead.
He let out a little pussy scream and I clapped so hard. I was clapping. I was like, yeah. And it's just like, and like, yeah, other people's reactions. Some people like laughed, like, but I was just like.
You know what I was mad about that though?
Hmm.
He never got to see any of the supernatural shit and have that oh shit moment.
That he was wrong.
Because like Lucas came back
sure.
and beat his ass some more and knocked his ass out mm-hmm. and he just died.
And he did, yeah.
Well, so he never knew.
I think maybe at the very end he's just like, oh shit!
Oh shit, I'm melting through the middle.
The middle of my body is being like completely dissolved.
That's pretty much an instant death sort of situation.
It's an instant death, but yeah, that's a good point, because like he could, in his back of his head, you're just like, it was Eddie, or like, was the satanic cult.
I was
cult.
Expecting
like,
in that heightened moment when he's choking Lucas out.
Yeah.
And she starts to raise up, you know, into mm-hmm. the air and behind them, where he's focused on killing his basketball teammate. And he doesn't, like, I thought for a second there was going to be a moment where he points or something and like he sees it and he gets distracted. No, Lucas just breaks free and beats his ass and unconscious. Honestly, he never understood. He never had that like, oh shit moment.
Yeah.
This shit's real.
Didn't they have that with the boat though? When they were over the hell mouth or whatever?
He immediately, cause remember they were at the town hall and he thought it was all Eddie. He thought it was all a satanic cult. He saw it. And he saw Eddie scared and like run away or whatever, but he still blamed it on them because he just couldn't understand.
But that's what I mean, is that they already had that moment where he saw something supernatural and he immediately already blamed. So
exactly.
So that moment had already happened where he was like, nope, it's the fucking kids.
I forgot about
that are doing mm-hmm. fucking wizard magic.
Yeah.
Well, it's the final thing when the broadcaster is talking about, you know, the disaster at Hawkins, and they say, and some people still believe, you know, it's this group called Hellfire. So some people are still probably going to believe.
Yeah.
Well, yep, mm-hmm. Satanism, Satan, D&D.
I think Satan.
This just literally popped in my head, but it's like a pretty good reference. It's like thinking about in the movie Gremlins, when at the very end of it, they have the newscast and it's just like reports of little green men and like only like the people in the town know what happened. And everyone's like, okay, whatever, because there's no proof because they're all gone and just like, da-da-da. There's no cameras. There's no like cell phone. So like no one else was like, okay, like people just rioted or something, like whatever. Like,
but we haven't even talked about the big bad.
The big bad. That's big so bad. Weird that we've gotten to like towards the end of the episode and we haven't even talked about Vecna.
Well, we got to save the best for last.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of it is because these kids are so fucking good. And the character development mm-hmm. is so good. There's so much more to the show than just a good villain, but still a very good villain.
Well, that's what we're talking about, because if you're going to have a villain, it better be good. And this time it's not, you know, it's not just a creature. It's not just a mind flare. This is a articulate, beautifully written villain.
I was really thankful that we got a little bit more explanation about the Upside Down
as well on
this season. Mm-hmm. Is that we don't have the complete flesh out, but it does seem like what they're suggesting is this is an alternate dimension. The Demogorgons are naturalized to this dimension. That Vecna or that, you know, that dude is the non-normal character. That the Mind Flayer is Vecna. That there was like this energy from this dimension that he incorporated that was the Mind Flayer. So he is the Mind Flayer and mm-hmm. and the Mind Flayer is him.
Yeah.
It's like the Holy Spirit kind of thing. There's the demigods and demigorgons, Vecna and the Mind Flayer. All is one.
Like when Billy was possessed, it's like you see like he's holding his hands like in front of him, like the orderly was. Like, what did we know like his name? Did he have a name? Like, as an orderly.
Yeah, he did.
Peter.
It was something like that, yeah.
But, like, he's holding his hands and he's, like, talking like one and everything. I'm very interested in this, like, theory, which I'm going to say I'm completely, like, don't agree with, but that people are saying that one is Eleven's father.
Nah.
I'm like, it's all over and I'm like, that's just, no.
I don't think so.
It's BS.
No.
But we're getting into some of the little tidbits that they used. Either they wrote in advance and waited and teased it all the way through, or they just beautifully used elements that they put into earlier seasons. Because stuff like that, like mm-hmm. he's holding his hands, you know, Billy was holding his hands like the way that they were going to do, or... like the grandfather clock, which apparently was episode actually one in like the entire fucking series.
Episode one, when Will careens his bike off the road, very faintly, you hear the clock.
What?
Holy shit. Fuck. That's incredible.
What? I had to go back and rewatch, and I'm like, that's the fucking clock.
That shit.
It doesn't sound
bananas.
You don't, it isn't like as apparent, but it's the sound. And you, when you're first watching it, it's just ominous music.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you're like, that's the fucking clock.
That's amazing.
It's great.
Holy. That's fucking rad.
I suggest everyone go back and watch that first scene when Will sees the Demodog or whatever. People say it was Vecna. It could just be the Demodog. I don't know. But it was in the road. And then, yeah. Just go back and watch that. You'll hear the clock.
A couple other little... we're right at the end, so I want to throw a couple little Easter eggs for people to look out for. Is that one thing we talked about off mic is that Eddie's Dio patches on his vest.
Oh, yeah. Came from the estate.
They came from the fucking estate that Dio's widow actually sent those to Stranger Things to use in the series. So those are from the Dio estate, which is the coolest shit ever.
And I think it was cool that they were able to use Metallica since they're so weird.
They are weird about their music.
Not letting people use their music, but I think it just fit the narrative. So
amazing. That was the most awesome epic like metal sequence of all time. Possibly.
Even the characters were like, most metal moment ever.
But you know they paid for that shit.
Oh yeah.
And it's not the first time they used Metallica.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Also, just saw an interview with Joseph Quinn today, and he said that was him on the guitar, except for the solo. He said that was a black belt like guitarist like that did that, but like he did actually play the guitar for that.
Watching some stuff regarding their sound design, which is really something that is so important to the series. Not only just the synth work from their was it Survivor, I think is the band that they have.
It's these guys, these brothers. They did a great job.
They did great, but also Dance with the Dead, which is a dark wave band or whatever that I'm a fan of. They have a track on there as well. But Running Up That Hill is super important.
Just iconic.
But also the way that they designed the sound, it was described as like the maximum sound design, where there's no minimalism in this at all. A hand movement, you hear more of a swoosh than you would in most design. Hanging up a phone, running, and you hearing the plods of people running on dirt is exaggerated. Everything is like maxed out at 100% to create this like bigger than life stylization. And I would suggest, if I had this opportunity, and it was honestly really important to understand how engrossing this series is to go on YouTube and watch those moments of the Running Up That Hill moment in the cemetery, the Running Up That Hill remix, which is fucking fire, where they incorporate the Stranger Things theme into it. It's so fucking good. Watch that moment. It's on YouTube on its own, separate from all the other parts of that sequence, and you realize that on its own it's slow motion and over the top and kind of cheesy, but it transports you so well that in the moment you are crying and screaming and on board and accepting every moment of this over the top, insane big version of the world that you've been given, because they're that good at storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, even the opening credit music, like that just,
I love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just, it gets you this spooky, like, oh, creepy feel. Like, God, I just listened to that same thing on a loop. That
Oh yeah.
You know, that's one of the openings I don't skip very often. Yeah.
No. I never skip it.
Now, if there's a
jinx.
If there's a huge cliffhanger and I'm in a roll, I might skip it then, because I've heard it a bunch of times. But for the most part, I will leave it going.
Oh, if you can't wait the 14 seconds and you're like, no, I need to know now.
No. Like, when some serious shit just happened and you're watching the next one. All right. So the dudes that did the music are Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein.
Yeah. Incredible.
great synth work, and then
there is a YouTube video of them talking about being added to Stranger Things, and it has like it's like a 40-minute video of them showing all the fucking ancient like synth technologies that they have that they work with, and
they are legit
as
they are
fuck.
Not guys with Pro Tools and mm-hmm. like digital synthesizers.
These are all like analog shits.
They're doing the real deal. Yeah. And then we got to give credit where credit's due is because Kate Bush has literally, at this point in time, has made about $3 million.
She's making like $1 million a week.
Insane.
Off of this
show. So well deserved.
It's her biggest hit ever. And it was a hit when it came out.
The biggest.
But yeah, but it was also like it's the
I think number four. Yeah, I think it peaked again, like, really high.
No, it peaked at number one.
Oh.
It went to number one. It's her only number one she's ever had.
In the 80s, wasn't it, like, only in the 30s or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it overshot its
Yeah, in the States, it never release. Did well. It got up to number one in, like, the UK for a brief
That's
minute,
right, yeah, that's what it was.
Back in the day. Mm-hmm. But here, it never did. Now, nostalgia is a strong power.
Well, if you get a chance, Big Boy from Outkast, there's a video on YouTube of him talking about that Kate Bush was one of the artists that he grew up on, that his mom was a big fan of Kate Bush. Wow. So he was like a huge fan of Running Up That Hill. So when it got popular again, he's like, fucking right it should be. Like, he was on board, like,
oh my
fucking
God, I love
pro
that.
Kate Bush, like, super on board. It was just fucking great. Just Big Boy talking about how amazing Kate Bush is and how like incredible an artist she is a really fun 4 or 5 minute little video to watch.
Deep Cut, that song was originally titled Deal With God.
Yes.
Nice.
That is true. And if anyone wants to read it was like she wrote like this beautiful letter to the Duffer Brothers, and you can like read either an excerpt from it or just like this thing, and she just like thanked them like so much, and she said she had been a fan since the very beginning of Stranger Things and like all this beautiful stuff.
Aww.
And it was just like the sweetest thing, and I'm just heart. Like this is fucking that's amazing. So, I love this.
That's I posted after watching the final episodes of the season that my review was just scream crying. They're all friends and they love each other, because as much as there's a darkness to this series and it's dealing with a lot of horror elements, at the end of the day the conversation that's being had is that like acceptance and love and support is what gets you through the hardest times in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these kids are dealing with in the most like psychotic circumstances you can possibly imagine, that it's their support with one another, even the ones that aren't even that close, like you got like Eddie and Steve Harrington, that they find that moment to be able to, at the very least, respect that they deserve to be there, you know? And that's what gives this show power. It the sound design, the acting is definitely, and the writing is definitely part of the reason why it's so good, but it's really that underarching statement that it comes down to just, like, supporting one another and being, you know, being there for one another that makes this show.
I just love how they all finally reunite in the end, and then they're just like, no, I already know. They're like, how do you already know? And for a second in my head, I'm like, what do you mean? And I was like, oh, right, no cell phones. It's the 80s.
No cell phones. Yeah.
For a second, I was like taken texting. Out. I was like, wait.
Nobody is texting this whole time.
I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
It wasn't safe.
They have no idea.
It wasn't safe. Oh, yeah, they don't know. They don't know.
They anything. Don't know.
They don't know shit.
They don't know she was in a pizza freezer. Like,
they don't know that there was like a shootout in the fucking house.
They were like, I tried to call you. The phone was busy.
They don't know Surfer Dude Pizza exists. Like, they don't know that's a thing.
They don't know all the hijinks that went down in fucking Russia.
They don't
and
know
the
fact
that
dude,
Murray was
Russia?
Awesome in this
they
fucking
don't know that,
season.
That
fucking
Dustin's girlfriend
Murray.
Has a better understanding of like what Dustin's friends are like.
Murray was so awesome. I thought Murray was going to die. I thought they were going to kill his ass.
I thought that too. I was like, that's going to be the throwaway because he's like so badass and everybody loves him. But it's just like,
his
if he
karate
died,
fight
like,
on the fucking plane.
I love that he was actually effective at karate. Like everybody, when he said that, I guarantee nobody expected him to actually be good at karate.
Yeah.
And so when he actually like brought some shit, everybody was like, oh shit.
What are you talking about? No, he has been competent. In every motherfucking thing he's done so far, how would you dare
Brett Gelman
doubt? Murray.
Love for Brett Gelman. Yeah, I saw a video of him actually training like karate. Like he fucking learned
that shit. That's fucking amazing.
Brett fucking Gelman.
That's so funny.
Which one of my favorite things he ever did was in Other Guys when he's just like, Arnold Palmer alert. Arnold Palmer alert. Pew, pew. Other Guys?
No.
I remember that.
Great, but I just know him from Fleabag. And he is such an abysmal piece of shit.
No,
in that
yeah,
show.
He is.
And in the best way, like he does such a good job of
being.
So when he showed up in Stranger Things, like, oh, this slimy piece of shit, and he was, and to see him kind of transcend where he's like a lovable slimy piece of shit is just fucking fantastic.
No, he's fantastic, and he's great.
He has some weird ass movies, like.
He was in Lemon.
Oh, yeah.
Lemon's out there.
Anytime anyone kills things with the fire flamethrower, it's great.
Yeah, he did a great job. He really, really solid. He saved one to make sure that Hopper had a chance to kill something with a Conan sword.
Yeah.
So I'm cool with that. That's great. Two, the remix version of Running Up That Hill. So, yep, fucking bravo on that.
I definitely agree. I thought he was going to die, and I'm glad he didn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, on that, pull out your phones. We've got our two scenes for the final bit here. We'd like to finish out our episodes with a little...
Oh, no. Why would you do that?
I'm ruining everyone's life with both scenes.
Oh, shit. Oh, my fucking God.
We're talking
about a
little segment called Don't Cry During Making a Drunken Scene.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Why would you do this to me?
Making a Drunken Scene.
Am I not going to be able to finish this?
I might actually
ugly crying already.
Yeah, I might actually just add you being like, why would you do this to me as a tail end after making a drunken scene? Like, why would you do this to me? I chose the worst choices.
This is terrible. Why would you do this?
This is torturous. This is so rude.
You know what? I had a feeling you would do this.
Yep, no, absolutely.
There's not a scene with Argyle instead where he talks about...
No, I'm sorry. This is what we're doing here.
Okay.
We've got the conversation between Eddie and Dustin after Eddie was finished his attack.
I am seriously crying right now.
And then we've got the conversation between Max and Lucas. So I'm making sure to...
Okay.
And this out the right way here. So,
all right. Well, I'm going to call this right now. You did this. You chose these things.
Yeah.
You're going to be Lucas on the second one because of that gigantic epic thing at the end.
Oh God. Okay.
No, that's you.
You know what? I'm going to try to be sincere too because I don't actually want to like make fun of his dialogue. So on that, but
like my heart is racing.
So wait. Okay. So I feel like you like talked very much about Eddie and Dustin. So do you feel you'd rather be Max?
I don't know.
Fair. I'll take the bullet and I'll do Eddie or Dustin. So
that's fine.
Groot, you should be Eddie. I know you want to be.
Sure.
Okay. I will be Dustin.
I'll be Eddie.
I guess I gotta be Max.
You be Max.
I can be Max if you want to be.
I don't think it's gonna matter.
I don't think it matters. Okay. I'll be Dustin.
All right. So you can make. Eddie's you can do accents. Honestly. This is so like emotional that if you just want to read it through, that's also fine.
Let me just do this.
But you know what? That's kind of we've done 7.5 years of this shit, and the fact that this show has that much of an emotional response just suggesting the drunken scene says a lot about how important the show is.
Bro, we have had a slumber party watching a season of this
correct,
show.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Okay. Eating chicken and waffles and boozy milkshakes that I definitely overboozed. Holy shit.
We all connect on this show in different ways.
All right, so we're going to start with the Eddie Munson, Dustin Henderson conversation.
All right, let me move the mic so you don't hear
Okay, no, all right.
Okay.
Here we go.
Ready?
Ready.
I didn't run away this time, right?
No, you didn't run.
You're going to have to look after those little sheep for me, okay?
No, you're going to do that yourself.
No, man. Say, I'm going to look after them.
I'm going to look after them.
Good. Because I'm actually going to graduate.
I think it's my year. Henderson, I think it's finally my year. I love you, man.
I love you, too.
Oh, well done. Well done.
Fuck!
Yikes.
I think putting Andre on the second one was maybe the wrong decision, because it's going to be like crying before we even start.
Oh, man. This is like...
That's good for acting.
Actually,
though,
for Max, that might work, because, I mean, Max just got fucked up.
Yeah, that's right. It's good for the acting. It's fine.
Okay, so this is Max and Lucas, so
pretend
let's just...
all your limbs are broken and you're blind.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Just imagine you were Helen Keller in a demolition derby.
Oh my God.
Why would you say that?
God damn it.
Fuck.
God damn it. All right, here we go.
That might be the name of the episode. Yeah. Helen Keller in a demolition derby.
Too soon.
Nobody will get it.
All right, Max, whenever you are ready.
Okay. Lucas?
Yes, I'm here.
I can't feel or say anything.
I know. It's okay. We're going to get you help, okay? Just hold on.
Lucas, I'm scared. I'm so scared. Fuck, why would you do this?
I know.
I don't want to die. I'm not ready.
You're not going to die. Hang on.
I don't want to go. I'm not ready.
You're not going to die. Just hang on. Max. No, Max. Stay with me. No, don't go, Max. Stay with me. Just look at me, Max. Max, look. Bye. No, stay with me, Max. Hang on. Erica, help. Max, stay with me. Max, please stay with me. No, Max. Max. And scene.
Oh, God.
Bravo.
Oh, God.
Bravo.
And I'm tearing up.
It literally took me, like, what we talked about earlier, like, fucking.
Oh, my eyeliner's running down my face.
Caleb was absolutely outstanding in that scene.
So good.
So fucking good. So outstanding.
Like, it proved he had so many cheesy lines in other seasons of the show.
For sure.
And didn't get a chance to really be like a story arc. And he got that opportunity in the season. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy because he got to be able to show just how fucking talented this kid is as an actor. He killed it.
Well, his Erica get help. That was ad-libbed.
No, the Erica get help. That's what fucking broke me.
Oh, that was ad-libbed?
Yeah, it was ad-libbed. Like, I read it later that, there's a couple scenes. That one was ad-libbed. And I think that just goes to show, like, my hands are shaking. But that just goes to show, like, how just beautifully they wrote those two scenes. Because it's like, you get one right after the other. And that's about the scene where when he said, get help. That was when I was yelled out loud, like, fuck that! Oh my God. And it's just so great that it got this emotional reaction
across the world. I wonder how many people called the police thinking somebody died because somebody was reacting to Stranger Things. Like, you know, at least a couple elements of like somebody in an apartment building that was like, no, Max, no. And somebody's like, I gotta call the fucking police. Somebody named Max is dying.
So also like the shock at the end when like, you know, like Elle's still there and she's like dead and then she's just like, no. And I'm like, what?
Which?
What? Oh, and then she's like, shit. So I mean, obviously like her
if
limbs
I could
will
turn
heal.
Turn back dead.
But is she going to be blind? Like there's a lot of questions.
I mean,
here.
I think she's probably going to be blind and also like definitely able to do the Kermit like wiggle arm thing a little bit easier. Her bones aren't quite the way they used to be.
Well, they'll heal. She's cast, so.
Well, the thing that's so interesting about that is hopefully we'll see next season is just that Max, she's in the coma, but they said like, oh, Henry, he consumes. Part of her mind, like they were having that epic battle in her mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it's just when she reached 11, tried to reach into her mind, it was just blank. And it was just gone because it's just, where is Max?
Where is Max? That's fucking wild.
it's going to be bananas. If and when she wakes up, she's going to be traumatized on the level of, like, Nog in Deep Space Nine after he got his leg blown off. God. And, like, he's seen the shit. And, like, it's going to be hardcore. It's like, no, you know what? It's going to be like Christian Bale in Empire of the Sun. Just, like,
Jesus.
Thousand-yard Ooh. Stare forever.
I'm wondering if her and Will get really close. I mean, we know Will's gay, but, like, you know what I mean.
Oh,
like,
no, but I think there's definitely going to be some closeness there for sure.
If she wakes up.
Oh, they're going to bond on the shit. Yeah. They've been to Nom.
Also, a nod to that actress as well that plays Max because... Sadie Sink, because being able to play a character that is guarded,
mm-hmm.
But still emoting through that wall that's being built up by the character is a very hard and nuanced direction. Mm-hmm. And a lot of adult actors and actresses that have been around for decades can't properly do that.
Yeah.
And you see the emotion that she's guarding in every moment that her walls are up. She does such a fucking good job. The Duffer Brothers are clearly good at directing kids, but if you don't have kids with talent, then you don't have a lot to work with. These kids had the right direction and also had the proper talent to do some of the most incredible, like, series work that I've seen in decades.
And the writing.
Mm-hmm. And the writing, yeah. The writing.
All three things have to be there.
I'm over the moon. I didn't think that season 4 could top the previous seasons because of how deeply affected I was by it. But fuck, they ruined my life with this season. And I cannot wait to see the apocalyptic levels that they're taking season 5. Mm-hmm. It's going to be incredible. So I hope that you join us, listeners, on our journey when season 5 comes out. Thank you for joining us on this trip through the Upside Down on this episode. Definitely rate, review, subscribe, all the things you do for podcasts for this show. Thank you to all the panelists for this emotional roller coaster that we went on. I think Audrey's going to have to, like, get counseling after this.
This was a lot. Yeah. This was a lot.
But it is actually cathartic to be able to talk about it with friends about, like, this very emotionally heavy 80s genre show
with kids.
With kids.
Like, who would have thought?
Yeah. But you know, it clearly the Duffer Brothers got bullied as kids because they knew how the buttons to push.
Oh, hell
to
yeah.
Make us all feel things.
They all watch the right things too.
Ah, motherfuckers. All right. Thank you so much for listening. I'll find you next time for another episode. I'm Mike the Hobbit. Join us or die.
Shut the front door, Hobbit.
GUIPodcast.com.
Most metal moment ever!